And good morning. It is 10 a.m. You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and it is time once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and we are continuing this week with our third in a series of interviews with folks running for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. Of course, we started off speaking with Dale Bagley. Last week, we had Linda Hutchings on the program. This week, we are happy to have with us in the studio, Charlie Pierce. Charlie, thanks so much for coming out this morning. Hey, good to see you.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
And tons to talk about this week, as we have the past few weeks. We're lots of ground to cover, no shortage of issues that the future borough mayor will have to contend with. And of course, if you have some questions, comments, concerns, we would love to hear you and have you get in on the conversation as well. Give us a call. 690-1687 is the number, 690-1687. Or don't be afraid to drop us a line on that Facebook if you were on that this morning. And we're going to get started this morning, Charlie. We'll just take a few moments. I know you've had lots of opportunities to do this around town. There's been one mayor debate forum already down in Funny River, another one this afternoon at the Kenai Visitors and Cultural Center in Kenai at noon, another chamber debate going on. But I guess to open up, let us know a little bit about yourself and why you're running for mayor.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've lived in Alaska for 42 years. My wife's name is Vonnie. We have five boys between us. Three were raised right here on the peninsula, and we also are blessed with 10 grandkids. Keeps us very busy. My wife's family homesteaded on the peninsula, and she was born here before statehood. So there's a long history here that I think Alaskans in general are very, very proud of. You know, when you talk to folks in Alaska, you always... one of the things they always talk about is, well, where'd you come from? You know, we all came from somewhere. Most of us came from somewhere. Some of us were actually born here. And so I appreciate that attribute. My wife also graduated from Kenai Central High School before they had a swimming pool and a cafeteria. And, you know, they used the gym.
Back in the good old days.
Yeah, you know, when they used to improvise and make things work, you know. Three of our sons graduated from Kenai Central High School. Go Cards. You know, I know we've talked a little bit about football. I certainly like that, the Cards. I graduated from Bartlett High School and came up to Alaska with my mother in 75, and I went on after high school and attended UAA, and I received a degree in small business management. You know, I was also honored to serve after high school. I went right to work. You know, I thought I wanted to be a paramedic and I needed some money for school. And so I went to work. I took a construction job with NSTAR. And I didn't realize that I would be starting a 39-year career with a company that I grew to contribute a lot to and grew to love. And it was a family-oriented company. And after 39 years, I retired June of 2016. Equally honored, I served two terms on the Borough Assembly from 2009 to 14, and I served as the Vice President on the Assembly for two of those terms, 2 years of the six-year service there. I think I've learned a lot in life. I learned something new every day. I'm a life learner, I wouldn't go into the borough building and I'd know it all. I don't know it all. But I bring some attributes and some experience and a track record that I think is needed at this time here in the borough. And my experience and my leadership skills will carry us through the next two terms. And, I'm excited about that. I think that we have some very important decisions that we'll need to make. And I think with a strong, strong team of borough employees, as well as the leadership that circles the mayor's office, I think we'll go forward and we'll protect what we have and we'll set ourselves up for a bright future.
Now, something that that has been sort of a constant in speaking with you and speaking with the other folks on the ticket for borough mayor, everyone is pointing to a long business experience in the private sector and how that's going to contribute to helping administer affairs in the borough. That's the mayor's job, is sort of the head administrator of the functioning of the borough government. And so this is a question that I've thrown out to everybody because they point to that business experience. And you and I were talking a little bit about this before the show. show began is this idea of the role of government and what it's there for. And, you know, business is there to provide a service, but at the same time make a profit. That's not precisely the same case with government. It's certainly there to provide a service, but not necessarily to make a profit. And so we hear a lot of this, especially in times when we're working with budget deficits and those sorts of things, that we need to trim down, scale down, operate in a streamlined way like a business has to. Is that your feeling? What kind of lessons do you bring from the business world that are applicable to government?
Well, think about it. I managed a gas utility on the peninsula for 26 years. Prior to that, I came from the management in Anchorage. 1983, one of the largest construction seasons we've ever seen in Alaska. Building boom, oil was at its peak. Remember, 85, oil went to $9 a barrel. So not only have I been able to manage resources and staff and assets for a large company, I've dealt with some of the more restrictive times as well. You know, the feast and famine cycle of Alaska, oil boom up, down, prices up, the fluctuation of oil prices, fish prices fluctuating. A lot of variables out there. And, you know, I've been at a desk where I had responsibility in making certain that the numbers matched and the books were balanced. And I have that experience. I'm seasoned. I'm experienced. I've been challenged. I've proven myself in those challenging times. And I think that we're going to be challenged in this borough. And I think I'm the candidate that can go in and take care of the business and still deliver services at a very high level.
You spoke a little bit about some of the important decisions that are going to have to be made by the next administration over the next handful of years, and I have to imagine that a lot of those decisions are going to be sort of groundwork decisions and policy things that will hopefully help, what we hear a lot of folks talk about is leveling out that boom and bust cycle that you mentioned, that up and down and feast and famine thing. How do you level that out? How do you make it so the lows aren't so low and that when the highs are high, you don't go crazy, right? And so I guess that just sort of leads into the general budget question of what is your philosophy in sort of leveling those things out? Because right now, one of the big debates is taxes. There have been a lot of cuts made. Some people want more cuts to be made. Some folks are saying that's enough cuts. It's time for new revenue. This is the debate right now, of course. Where do you stand on that? Of course, there's the ballot proposition asking for a hike in the sales tax. Let's just start there with ballot proposition number two on the sales tax.
You know, that's a tax policy that, if there's any tax policy that's been offered to date, I could support that premise. But let me back up. Prior to supporting that policy or that initiative, I think that it is a more genuine approach would be to go in and actually do an evaluation of what we're currently doing and look for cost savings. My experience has been to find savings and avoid expenditures. That's how I've been schooled, and so I'm accustomed to it. I'm comfortable in that arena, and it doesn't have to hurt. It doesn't have to be ugly. It can be over a period of time. You move things, you make decisions in government, and things happen very slowly. The private sector, things tend to happen pretty fast. I just think that you mentioned leveling out the playing field. One of the things you do is you forecast, you plan. Planning, you're constantly planning and updating your plan. What is a budget? You know, we had an individual that's running for borough on the borough assembly that his quote the other night was, well, we don't have a spending problem in this borough. Well, I want to set the budget in front of you, and it's $4 million plus dollars in deficit spending. And if you don't call that a spending problem, then I don't know what a spending problem is then, I guess. Help me understand that concept. We have a spending problem in our borough. And yes, some of it has been a shift in cost from the state level back to the local level. We have to be prepared to react and to respond to those types of situations. Could have long predicted, forecasted, and looked out in the futures and said, as oil prices started dropping, we could have been doing some forecasting and some planning and saying, wait, yes, we got $120 barrel oil right now, but it's predicted. The futures market is saying that oil's going to go down in the next 6 months. Well, that's a plan you put together, and you adjust your plan every 6 months. A budget is a moving target. It is a document that describes your spending plan for the year. That's what a budget is. And budgets can be adjusted. I'm not the tax and spend guy. I really am not. I'm not into the tax and spend cycle that we've watched. You know, think about this. You go out this weekend and you spend more than you're making. And you can't come to your boss on Monday morning and say, hey, boss, I spent more than I made or that you're paying me and I need more money. And yet we do that every day in government. We do it in Washington, D.C. We do it in Alaska and Juneau at the state level. And we've allowed ourselves to do it right here in the peninsula.
We hear that a lot. But the difference, again, and getting back to this idea of business versus government, is I might not get a raise from my boss. I can certainly ask for one. And the borough assembly can certainly ask for more taxes. They might not get them, but they can certainly ask for them. So I think that's kind of a fundamental difference in making that comparison. I mean, a government always has the ability to at least go out and look for more revenue. And so we're going to spend some time on this. What I want to get to first, a specific question. You said, and all the candidates have said this, And it is a tough one, and it is something that certainly you got to get into office and get the numbers in front of your face to really make any decisions. But assuming a Charlie Pierce administration, when you do dig into that budget and looking for savings, what are some areas, maybe not specific line items or specific dollar amounts, but what are some areas where you think some savings could be had?
Work comp claims.
Yeah.
How much are we spending on work comp? Injuries, people getting slip, trips, and falls. People bumping their heads, their elbows, and their break and hurting their backs.
Mm-hmm.
There's significant savings there. Implement a safety program that works. You know, I worked at NSTAR for a long time, as I've mentioned, and I had a good safety program. It was very successful.
So maybe is that one of those areas where you've seen in business, were there over your career at NSTAR, were there spikes, were there issues that you had with that, where all of a sudden you go, boy, we need to put in a safety program?
It was managed. And, you know, there were performance measures placed on everybody that worked there.
Yeah.
And it's expected. It's an expectation. You create these standards, these expectations, and then you manage it.
Mm-hmm.
You manage it. You don't ignore it. You don't turn your head to it. And I think all too often on many occasions in government, they tend to turn their head to it. And we just get comfortable with things. And then we just go back. It's called status quo. We're okay with that. That's close enough. Well, I'm not the close enough kind of candidate. I'm not your close enough kind of guy. I don't deal with mediocrity very well. I like a decent, fair and equitable and achievable standard that everybody can strive for. And then what you do is you reward and you praise. You do a lot of praising and you do a lot of clapping, and you become the cheerleader, if you will, for those that are there. And I think part of the mayor's job is to brag about government and to brag about those folks that are providing the services inside government. And we don't hear about those individuals, those hardworking individuals, very often. And I think in my merits administration, you'll hear more about the individuals on an individual basis as to who they are, what they do, and why they do what they do, and what contributions they're making back to this community.
You mentioned workers' compensation claims as being one area of the budget that could definitely use some attention and could be a source for some potential savings. Are there other areas where, and you also mentioned this idea of developing standards and holding folks accountable to those things, are there other areas within the borough that are missing the mark, be it, I don't know, at the landfill or road service areas, things like that?
Well, here's what I want to do, is I want to go in and identify the services that we provide and the mission critical things that have to go along with those services in order to deliver a high level of service to the constituency out in the community. Short of that, you create the second list, and the second list are the nice things that we do to make this a nicer place to live, and we talk about it. I don't think the mayor just arbitrarily makes these decisions on his own. He brings committees together. He brings his staff together, his directors together. Pick and choose. Create a target. Look for savings, create a percentage that's attainable. You get with the financial officer, you pick a target and you work on it every year. It's a goal. You plant the seeds and you start a culture, if you will, within an organization, and it grows. It tends to grow. You know, when employees are challenged and they're rewarded for working safe and they can see the savings and they can have some ownership in it, When you make folks own what they do, they'll do a better job. When they don't own it and they feel like they're just there providing a service and they have nothing to say about it, then they're not going to necessarily produce the greatest or achieve the greatest results. And so it's not only a matter of going in and looking at a budget and cutting numbers, it's a matter of getting the culture within the organization to work in unison and to create some synergy with the whole group as a team. You become a team and you work together instead of working independent of each other. And, you know, one of the things we learn as young adults when we play sports is that you're on the team. And there's a number of folks that are on the team. And it's not one individual in the team that makes the greatest contribution or is credited for making the greatest contribution. It takes the whole team in order to have a successful team. And so I would create that organization within the borough.
Charlie Pierce joining us on the Kenai Conversation this morning. If you have a question, we'd like to have you join us as well. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And I guess I want to keep on the ballot propositions here for a moment. If we could, we talked a little bit about the sales tax proposition, something that is that something that you would be in favor of?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we could... but again, as mayor, if it fails, it's not earth shattering to me. I expect that, we've heard, if you're listening to the voice of the folks that live in this borough, they're saying, look, we've paid enough. We want to see you tighten up the house internally. You know, when you're working in the private sector and you're paying taxes to help support the cost of running your government, and if you're paying attention to that process and you're seeing individuals in government, the two fastest growing industries in America over the last 5 to 10 years has been healthcare and government. Okay? Well, those government jobs that you're creating, the private sector's paying for them. And you got to create more money in the private sector to help afford the cost of government. Look at Alaska globally. Look at Alaska, just Alaska. Look at how many people live in the state of Alaska. What, 750,000 people? Look at the cost of doing business in Alaska. Look at the number of jobs, actual jobs in the state of Alaska, and look at the expense. Look at our state budget, billions of dollars, and we can't seem to balance it. And now they want, because of the oil pipeline is 2/3 empty and we're not making the revenue off the oil, they want us to pay the taxes to run what grew over the last 10, 15 years is what government is.
It's that leveling out idea. And it looks it like is. We've got a call. We're going to go there right now. Good morning. Welcome to the conversation. Who's this?
Yeah, good morning. I didn't quite hear you.
I said, good morning. Welcome to the Kenai Conversation. Who's this?
Oh, my name's Bill. Hey, I don't know the candidate, but I listened to his statements here, all good words and whatnot. In regard to the workman's comp, I'd like to be educated a little bit. Does he have numbers, say, for the last half decade or decade on what we're paying for workman's comp that would let the listener know what the potential is there for savings? I mean, I understand safety program, taking ownership, working with the team and all that, but what are the numbers?
When I was on the borough assembly.
Thanks for that call, Bill. Yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
When I was on the assembly, $1 million+ annual cost. $1 million+, and you know, when we're looking at school district funding and we're trying to fund to the cap, trying to give them the dollars that they need to educate our kids, $1 million can go a long ways. It was 2009 to 14 when I was on the assembly, it was in excess of $1 million.
Yeah, that's a big number and certainly goes a long way. We hear roughly a $4 million budget gap, and so if you take that in conjunction with if a sales tax cap gets raised, that
big chunk,
that more or less closes it up, right?
Big
between
chunk.
Those two
yes,
things?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Thanks for that call, Bill. Again, 690-1687 is the number. If you would like to get in on the conversation, you can also drop us a line on the old Facebook as well. We'll be checking that throughout the program, too. On the other ballot proposition, well, I guess before we move on to the other ballot proposition, another number that I get that I hear thrown out a lot, and especially when it comes to the budget, Mayor Navarre talks a lot about the growth of the budget over the years, and it's pretty low, like 1 or 2% budget, 2%. Yeah. Is that an acceptable number for you as in terms of growth? I mean, it feels like there's only so many years where growth can be flat or at a very modest level like that, but Is 2% growth an acceptable number?
Yeah, I think it's reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, just inflation. Inflation in and of itself, I think he's right. Just that in and of itself. You have to have a tight budget in order to just sustain yourself through those cycles in and of themselves.
Yeah.
You know, just inflationary measures, you know. You have negotiated contracts that you negotiate with your employees, you know. Those add annual costs to the mix of providing the services. And so if you're doing everything else as efficiently as you can, you know, it takes taxation. I'm not saying that you shouldn't tax. It takes taxation to balance the mix, but it's a combination of things that I think that would would offset some of the taxation. And so here's my real concern. It's we spend and we tax, we spend and we tax. When you could see the cycles, they do it in Washington, they do it in Juneau, they're doing it here, they're doing it right here at home. You talked a moment ago about, well, you know, we have to vote on taxation, and you do, but you know what, the mill rate is set by the assembly, and the assessments that are placed on the valuation of your property, you didn't vote on that. You didn't vote on that. And so if you want a real quick way to grab some money and to fund the mix of taking care of businesses, is you just go out and appreciate everybody's property. And there's been a number of times that in fact has happened. And if you look at the history, let's go back in history a little bit. Let's talk about the history of government and leaders. Let's talk about when Mr. Bagley was in office. Mr. Bagley lowered the mill rate, one mill. And that was, boy, everybody smiled, and they were real happy about that. But what was the balance, and what was the revenue on hand, available revenue on hand when he left office? The next mayor comes in is John Williams. John Williams comes in, and I'll quote John Williams. I'll remember it. We don't have a spending problem. We have a revenue problem. First year John Williams was in office, he raised $12 million to refund the fund balance that Bagley had spent down, allowed to spend down. Now, it's challenging. It can be challenging if you're not paying attention to what you're doing. So while we want to give him credit for lowering the mill rate one, I felt good about it too. I think you can easily give him credit for the $12 million that John Williams had to come in and raise after his service as mayor. And so let's speak the record. Let's talk about the record and what's on the record in regards to the decisions that we make as leaders.
Charlie Pierce joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. Of course, if you want to join us as well, you certainly can get in on the conversation. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. And we've got a question come in on Facebook. Again, if you want to look us up there, just search for KDLL 91.9 FM. And the question is, Charlie Pierce, what is your stance on Proposition 2? Which I believe is the sales tax proposition. I looked at that first and I thought Proposition 1, which is the marijuana.
We just talked
about that. Talked about Proposition 2, and that's something, Charlie, that you are in favor of.
And it's you know, I think if there has been a proposed fix to the process, that would be a I think that's a fair way to do it. I like a consumer tax. I like I would prefer that.
So keeping on the ballot propositions that voters will have to weigh in on this fall as well. Proposition 1, of course, is the cannabis question, and I'm sure you've fielded this question a number of times. What's your stance on it, and what do you think?
You know, I think that having regulations on cannabis is a good thing. Having access to it from a medical perspective, I think, is also a very, very supportive thing that I can get behind. I think that in light of the issue, there's two parties out there that are working very, very hard, and they're very passionate about the issue. And I think that the position that I'm taking is I'm going to take a neutral stance in this one and say that out of respect for both sides of the issues, my personal plans with that prop, one will be I'll take care of that in the ballot box, And however, I've also said that if it succeeds, then I will be the mayor that makes sure that administratively it's done well. It won't be a real bureaucratic, drawn-out process. It'll be handled appropriately and timely. And but out of respect for both sides, I'll take a neutral position on it.
It does seem to be, and as you talk to folks, certainly who are in support of the issue, one of the selling points, and as we've been talking about the budget, is this source of revenue and helping offset some of those costs for education funding, which is where all the sales tax goes from cannabis sales. And so in a search for revenue without it hurting anybody, without it being done on property taxes, I guess I'm curious why you wouldn't want why you wouldn't want more than just a neutral stance on that?
Well, I wished it would raise $4 million.
That would be the easy way out, wouldn't it?
So, yeah, sure. Certainly. Yeah. I support the tax aspect of it. I think it's a I'm not trying to influence those folks out there one way or the other. I think that that's the best thing that I could do as mayor. As mayor, the mayor has responsibilities to follow the voice of the people, and I will do that.
Very good. Again, Charlie Pierce joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. You can join us as well. 690-1687 is the number. Again, 690-1687. Going through your candidate statement, which of course is available on the borough website, if you want to take a look at that, you talk about a potential Charlie Pierce administration making better choices and better decisions. And it's kind of broad language. I'm curious what you mean about better choices and better decisions.
Well, I think that one of the things I've learned in my life in making decisions. Most of them have dealt with revenue or money.
We're gonna take a quick break because this happens sometimes on Wednesday mornings. Okay. The test is in the process of being successfully concluded. I think everybody's safe and all of our systems are full check and we are a go.
It's good to have tests.
You know, and
when you want them to work when they need
that's them. Right. I swear, when we had the show on at 9 o'clock in the morning, it happened then too. It's just following us around no matter when we put it on. But we were talking about this kind of general idea of making better decisions, better different choices at the mayor's level. And yeah, just go ahead and talk about that, Charlie.
Well, I think from my experience, I have to fall back on my experience. In my life, the 26 years that where I was required to balance budgets, it wasn't an option, and I had to make a lot of decisions, and a lot of those decisions were related to, well, we're going to have to postpone this, or we're going to have to wait, or we're going to have to improvise, or we're going to have to find another way to do more with less. You've heard that concept, you know, work smarter, not harder, do more with less. Certainly, those are terms or comments that I'm very, very familiar with and comfortable with. You know, one of the things that you do as a leader is you sell ideas. You sell ideas, concepts, philosophical beliefs. You plant seeds in organizations. And, you know, one of the things you deal with is change. Change is always difficult for us to deal with. And one of the changes we're seeing now that I talked about when I was on the assembly commonly talked about was the number of grants that we had, grant spending and dollars that we had that were sent to this borough to help us take care of our day-to-day needs. And those grants, it's noticeably different today. You don't see when you're at the assembly meetings many grants being accepted and or funneled through the process. And so it puts the burden and the onus of taking care of things on the backs of everybody that lives here. I talked about that division problem in Alaska, how many people live here. It's just a simple division problem. When you have costs, high capital costs, and you're spreading it amongst the limited number of people that live here on the borough, you need to be making the very, very best decision. So how do I do that? You know, I listen to the voice of the people. I get people involved. I ask questions. I work with my directors, the employees in the borough. Who knows the answers better than the people that have been performing the services for many, many years? It's a mix of all of those things, but you know what that takes? That takes a high level of energy and desire by the leaders that have it to go through that process, because it's a daunting process. And you can take a laissez-faire approach to it and turn your head and skip along and go along with that, what we call, deja vu, everything's good enough, close enough, and or you can get involved and take the time to visit with folks and learn about what it is we're doing and how we might be able to do it differently. So that's what I'm talking about when I say let's do a better job with making decisions.
Good enough for government work is not a phrase that we will hear.
I don't think so.
All right. Charlie Pierce joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. As we hit the bottom of the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to take a quick little break. I'm going to grab a little bit more coffee. Hope you will stay with us for the second half of the program again. Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayoral Candidate Charlie Pierce joining us this morning. Take a quick break. Stay with us. And our old friends, the Dave Brubeck Quartet, keeping you company there. You are back with the Kenai Conversation this morning. I'm Shaylin Cochran, joined with Charlie Pierce, running for Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor. And we've gone through a lot of stuff so far, talked a lot about the budget, different ways to resolve some of those budget issues, whether they be from the spending side, from the revenue side, all sorts of different things we talked about so far. And one of the things I did want to talk about, and I would be remiss if we didn't mention it, is, Charlie, this would not be your first time behind that dais. Of course, you've served two terms on the Borough Assembly, and I'm curious what you've learned in running for Borough Mayor about sort of the different dynamics between representing a specific constituency on the Assembly, which in your case was the Sterling Funny River area, and how you kind of change your mindset, or if you change your mindset maybe a little bit when you broaden that out and start thinking about the needs of the entire Kenai Peninsula as opposed to just one little corner of it.
Well, I want to tell you that running for borough mayor, I'd have to say it's one of the longest job interviews that I've ever gone through. It's been really daunting. And, you know, you really get an appreciation of how large this borough is when you start putting up signs.
And, I can only imagine.
And buying signs and then buying enough signs to make sure you cover a good mix of the areas, you know. So a real diversity in our borough. You know, you have it's really neat. It's kind of a mix of voices and ideas and ideologies about, you know, how people see the role of government in their lives. You know, there's the mix from those folks that want you to do everything, provide everything, to the extremists that say, I don't want my tax dollars spent on anything outside of this, the five services that we're going to provide. And, you know, you get an appreciation for all of those groups and a respect for why they feel the way they feel about that. So it's a mix. And
And you mentioned earlier the idea of sort of the will of the voters and listening to folks. How do you plan, you know, that's, you talked about the diversity of the voters on the Kenai Peninsula. It's a huge place. There's, you know, pushing 60,000 people here almost. How do you sort of make that happen and keep your ears peeled and make sure that you are hearing all those diverse voices?
Well, you know, I think you have to be comfortable with knowing that you're on any given day, you're not going to make everyone out there happy with you, and you need to be comfortable with that. But I also, in my lifetime, I've spent a considerable amount of my time, and just the respect that I have for others, explaining the positions that I take and why I do what I do. And then another characteristic of me that some may not know is that I'll always put on a good argument, but I'm always listening too. And I'm always willing to respectfully agree, disagree. It's not personal. I'll agree to disagree with you. And then you can always come back and give me better information and demonstrate that I don't have all of my facts right. And I'm willing to adjust and make modifications and compromise.
Are there things that you can point to in terms of things that have swayed, whether probably on the Assembly? Was there anything that you came into with sort of an idea of this is how this works and this is how I feel about it, and should we have to make a decision, this is the way that I'll go in that decision, and then to see other things come in and that goes, well, I wasn't expecting that. Are there things like that you can point to?
There's two that were big issues when I was on the Assembly, and it was the hospital. We looked at you know, the Administration Inc. board brought us the Orlikoff Group. Orlikoff looked at the Health Care Reform Act and then boiled it down into, you know, 10 pages for you, if you will. And they read the entire document. And then they looked at where they felt the hospital was vulnerable in that with that policy, and identified how the hospital could prepare itself to respond to the Health Care Reform Act. And so that was one I would give an example to. And the second one was the anadromous stream ordinance. I certainly have a great appreciation for the work that we've done to protect our Kenai River. Look at all the work that's been in bank restoration and you know, a lot of mitigation has been done there to help the sustainability of our fisheries, and I think that needs to continue. I argued and voted against the anadromous stream ordinance because I really felt like when they talked about Daniels Lake or Island Lake or you know, Bishop Creek for that matter, and you know, I never heard of any science in the room where they said, look, we had X number of the numbers support the ingress and egress of the smolt that are coming in and out of there, and they showed no degradation or any support for potential degradation of that those streams and water bodies, and so I voted against it. However, on the other side of the fence, I have a strong appreciation for owners' rights and protective rights of our property, and if you're going to come in and just arbitrarily tell someone, well, you can't do something with that 50 feet, there ought to be a real reason. I didn't see any real reasons to do that and benefits. But today I could look at the habitat protection that we've given to our river and understanding the fisheries a little better. When you look at the drifters, the set netters, the dip netters, the sport fishing, and I call, there's two different classes of sport fishermen. There are those that are guided and then those that do it independently, you know. And when you look at all those user groups and everybody's looking at an allocation of a limited resource, you know, I think those groups need to come together and sit at the table. And when you got a fish board that is responsible for other regions as well as your own region, you know, it's real hard to get a balance or feel like you have a fair and equitable balance in the decisions that are being made. So I have some appreciation for, you know, the habitat protection we did on the lower peninsula. I think that the upper peninsula or the Mat-Su borough would benefit from doing some of the same things we did to protect our fisheries and sustainability of fish in their regions, and it might create better numbers for them as well, better returns.
Is that an issue that I guess maybe in hindsight you have a little bit better feeling about looking back a couple of years now down the road?
I do, yeah. And it's about, I said it when I began, I learn every day, you know, and acidification of our waters. You know, look at the clam tides down at Clam Gulch, Nanilchik, the beaches that we used to dig clams on, and you can see it. You can see the impact that extraction or take of those resources and what it's done to those areas. You have to go across the inlet now if you want to dig a clam or a decent-sized clam. You know, when you think about the fishery, the kings and the degradation and the numbers of the kings that have gone, you know, there's you can get 100 different views out there as to what the real reason or the cause is. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to point somewhere else.
Yeah. Are you a fisherman?
You know, I do like a 2-week run on a dock in by the Moose River, and it's called Fill the Jars with Salmon, and it's a passion that my wife has, and not necessarily that I have. She's a gatherer. She likes to gather.
Sure.
And she feels that if she puts jars of salmon in the cabinet, she's put away some things that are enjoyable for the winter. And so I go out and I have to catch the resource. But I think fishing's kind of work.
Yeah.
It's like work. I'd rather ride and mow the lawn or work in the garden.
Well, now to a lot of people, those are just as much work, if not more. Yeah. Charlie Pierce joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. You can join us as well. 690-1687 is the number if you have a question. Again, 690-1687. Or if you'd like to, you can drop us a line on Facebook, checking that out throughout the program as well. Talking a little bit about during the break, Charlie, you and I were talking about the idea of, well, I guess before we get to that question, we will go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome to the Kenai Conversation. Who's this?
Hi, this is Sharon.
Hi, Sharon. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I just want to thank Charlie for being at the Prop 1 meeting in Kapilov at the Mercantile, but I'm just really concerned that he's not going to be taking a stance on Prop 1 either way. And that's not very transparent when we're in a time when most citizens want transparency in government. Does he have anything to say about that? I know that a lot of people that get into government positions use that as their own stomp to kind of change things for their good, for what they think, for their morality, for their whatever it is they're about. So I'm just, you know, concerned that to not be transparent in your stance on Prop 1. I'm a veteran. I have a medical marijuana card. I was given that, but there were no dispensaries open to get that. So once I got that, the state made me a criminal, basically. And I just don't understand somebody not taking a stance one way or the other with citizens.
And thank you for that call, Sharon.
You're
welcome. And Charlie, let you get back into that. Yeah,
it's a pretty passionate issue for most folks that are out there. I think that the borough, if you looked at the vote on the legalization in the state, it was a close vote, and I think it's an issue that brings out some hostilities in some folks, and I just assume not. I don't want to enter that. It's not about me. Let me just tell you something. Charlie's not running for borough mayor because it's about me. You're not going to find a more genuine and a more honest and capable individual that is willing to talk to you about the issues openly and willingly. This issue I'm trying to be very careful and respectful of both sides. And I know it's hard for some of those folks. Some of those folks want me to go out in the parking lot and smoke some cannabis with them and to prove that I'm worthy or something. And I don't feel like it should require that. Here's what I want to tell you about Charlie is that I'm not a bureaucrat. I'm not a guy that likes big reams of paper and a lot of ordinances and a lot of legislation put in your way to prevent you from doing what you want to do. I respect the industry that's trying to get started on this peninsula. And I, as mayor, I would make sure that should the no vote carry the day, I would make sure that everyone that's involved in a cannabis business will go to the borough for a permit, and the process will be very cordial, very professional, and non-intimidating or restrictive. I think it's not about Charlie. I'm not trying to build myself an issue that I can come back on. I don't understand that. I'm a businessman. Keep saying that I'm a businessman, and I've seen politicians. Politicians are individuals that sit in the room and they look around on the night that legislation is being passed. You go back and look at my voting record, and you look at what I did when I was on the assembly, and you ask yourself, did I ever sway or swagger on an issue? I talk openly about the issues, and when I'm your mayor, I'll talk openly and honestly about the issues. But where there's an issue of that brings out controversy and from both sides, I think that the mayor sometimes needs to be respectful of those individuals and the desires of those people to make those choices and then have the responsibility after the fact to manage it.
Yeah, I think maybe another way to go about it is the idea of to what degree is it the responsibility or is the mayor obliged to advocate for a certain position or a certain policy, right? Whether it's, you know, a new tax policy or a certain cut of a program or a ballot proposition.
It's true. That's true.
To what degree do you think that's the role of the mayor, or is it at all?
Well, I think the role of the mayor is to speak about the facts and educate the community on the pros and the cons of issues. Certainly you influence, you have the ability to influence the outcome. But I want to be careful. I don't like politics. I think that you can very quickly go into the role of being real political and get into the end of the weeds on issues that perhaps the mayor should not be involved in.
Very good. Charlie Pierce again joining us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. 690-1687 is the number if you have a question. Again, 690-1687, or you can drop us a line on Facebook. Just look for KDLL 91.9 FM. And just not quite 10 minutes left to go here in the program. And one of the things that we talked about before we got to that last caller was during the break, you and I were talking about technology. And that's something that the other candidates and I have spoken about as well, is sort of a need for some more technology and access to better internet and those sorts of things. And just sort of in broad terms, I guess, what is your vision for the future of sort of jobs on the Kenai Peninsula? What is, again, this idea of the role of the mayor in sort of setting the tone for that and trying to lay some groundwork for what we all, I guess, most people sort of anticipate being a changing sort of job structure, even way up here on the Kenai Peninsula?
You know, let's talk about technology a little bit. I was exposed to that over the 39 years. I remember when I started, everything was paper, 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 paper. And what we really did is we tried to focus on getting rid of paper. And, you know, I was just talking to Tim Dillon across the hall, and he's doing a concerted effort to get rid of paper, try to eliminate paper, and he's doing it with technology. And I think that there are ways in the borough where we could get rid of, we can do a lot of stuff online. They've already done a lot of permitting applications and things like that to be done online. But for, you know, the assembly has gone to laptops and got rid of the copy papers of the packet every month. There's been a lot of effort made in the borough building to, eliminate paper. And I applaud those individuals. There's other technologies that, I'm the tech-tarded guy in the deal. But here's what I am, is I'm a mayor that will bring the technical, creative minds to the table and say, if you could make a decision tomorrow about changing any one practice or other practices, what would they be? What's the first one? And then let's make a list. You know, I mentioned I'm a planner. I like to do succession planning. I like to look out 5 years, 10 years, and look at the number of people that are going to be with us and those that are going to leave over the next 5 to 10 years. And we could do the same thing with technology and phase it in. There's obviously an expense. I think this is an opportunity that could also benefit us from the school district's point of view. Implementing more technology. You know, you talk about classroom sizes, and I really feel like I came up from Georgia, and I went to my first experience in Alaska going to a school was Bartlett High School, and it was a relatively new school, and I thought I was going to a university. I really did, and it made me feel more mature and made me feel more responsible, and I mean, it was great experience. It was a wonderful experience, and I really excelled my junior, senior year in high school, and I think it made a real difference in the outcome of my educational experience. And I think that with technology, these young adults that we're educating today, the traditional ways of teaching them, they're kind of bored with it. They like, this is the new, a laptop, and I'm holding up my little iPhone here, and it's a computer. I mean, remember when we had 286s? 286s and
Apple IIgs was the first thing at my house way back. Yeah.
I know. So what I'd like to say is that we need to have a leader that has some vision for the future and that not only takes care of the day-to-day business that we're doing today, but sets the table for tomorrow and maybe perhaps 5 to 10 years down the road so that we can be respond to the needs and the will and maybe some of the things that we really want and wish we could have. Maybe we could afford those things if we were better planners.
Opens it up to, again, a pretty broad question, but again, thinking about this idea that you just mentioned, laying out a vision for the future, 5 to 10 years, do you think that the Kenai Peninsula will have the same, you know, essentially more or less the same economy as it does now, or do you think technology is going to move fast enough that some of those, say, oil and gas jobs might be replaced by technology, or some of the healthcare jobs might be replaced by technology? Are those the sorts of things that, I guess, the Charlie Pierce administration would be planning for?
Always hard to predict the market and where the market's going to go. Futures is saying that oil 10 years out on a recovery of price from what we experienced before. Some say there's other technologies out there that will replace oil. I'm hearing some exciting things about some other energies and And I think we need to look at those. You know, we still stack trash. We take our solid waste, put it in cubes, and put it in a pile and bury it. You know, 10 years from now, is that going to be acceptable to you? 10 years from now, environmentally, will it be acceptable? Will we be faced with large capital expenditures to deal with our trash 10 years from now? Can we afford it? Those are some of the questions, some of the forecasting and the vision that we need to be talking about. I'd like to see us take the trash and do something different with it, quite frankly, and you know, burn it, generate some energy with it, you know, put some electricity back into the grid, you know. Alternative energy is something that has some viable points. Up to now, the upfront capital cost has prevented us from doing those things, but there's some other fuels that are now available that are could potentially come to fruition. And if those technologies, as they develop and evolve, we need to be looking at it and have some forecasts. Put the brightest and the smartest and the most creative individuals in the room and do some forecasting and put a plan together and some vision. There's a comprehensive plan that's going around the borough right now that they're developing. And some of those things that you look at on the comprehensive plan we've talked about, will oil be the number one energy and resource income resource that we still rely on 10 years from now? I suspect it's going to be a part of the mix, but I would hope that, and I'm hopeful. I've said I've been here for 42 years, and I've sat back for 42 years. When we turned on taps, I was getting out of high school. And you look at what we've done in the state of Alaska since we turned on taps. What have we done? Name one other industry, mega industry or major industry that we've developed or that we've invested in, and there's been a lot of money spent in the state of Alaska, and what have we done with it? And I guess what I'd say is I said, let's work smarter, not harder. And we've had some of the smartest and the most talented individuals around, and yet we can't seem to get to a decision-making point where we can say, look, we're going to go with this project. It has risks. But we're going to carry it, we're going to manage those risks, and we're going to deal with those risks as they come up, and we're going to build something for the future generations of Alaska. The kiddos that are graduating here from school, we're going to educate them, and they're going to go somewhere else because they're going to need a viable job where they can make a decent living. And quite frankly, when you're making $10 or $11 an hour, don't make it in Alaska. It's hard to raise family on $10, 11 bucks. They talk about minimum wage, 15 bucks. I mean, it's hard. So it creates a lot of social issues and pressures on families, young families, and you wind up with broken families, and you wind up with families that live thousands of miles away, and yet I sit back and wonder, wow, is there a smarter way we could do this and just simplify it and put some plans on paper and put a map ourselves a little bit so that we can see it, visualize it, and if we can visualize it and we can all own it. When you have ownership in anything you're doing, if you own it, the outcomes of the results are better, always better when you own it. So,
and I think that is a very good point to go ahead and close this conversation with. Charlie, I want to thank you so much for coming out today and spending an hour with us. It's been a great conversation. Thanks a lot.
It's been great. I appreciate it.
And I want to thank you as well for listening and thank everyone who called in with questions, dropped us a line on Facebook. That was great as well. You have been tuned, of course, to the Kenai Conversation this morning here on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. If you missed any portion of the program, it will be posted on our website, kdll.org, a little bit later this afternoon. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great morning.